Well, it's been the week of shock, reaction, then attempts at prophecy of varying worth about this new America where there's still so much to learn. We're surely more skilled, though, at assessing how our own country might need to adapt to this unexpected changing of the guard. As various commentators have remarked, it's really his foreign policy, the Trump foreign policy, that's particularly hard to judge. So what challenges might it pose to Australia and our place in the world? Questions that have engaged some of our well-known thinkers this week, like former prime ministers, like Professor Hugh White. A particularly tough New Daily offering from Professor Andrew McLeod from King's College in London, an Australian, that this election should prove to Australians we needed to recognise that never again would the US be as powerful and dominant as it's been, an epochal shift, and that we had to figure out how to link to the new world that was coming, probably heavily based around China. Well, I spoke yesterday afternoon to someone who's absorbed herself in providing some precision in this area of Australian attitudes to the US, our alliance with them, how we'll protect ourselves. Alex Oliver's a political scientist with the Lowy Institute, where she's presided over 12 years of the respected annual Lowy Poll, which asks rather searching questions about our perception of national friendships and foes, what really matters to us in this sometimes amorphous-seeming area of foreign policy, and how to relate that to our present predicament.
Thank you, Geraldine.
So tell us about what you know about Australian attitudes to the American alliance and to our place in the world. Not just guess, what do we actually know?
We know that Australians have historically supported the alliance very strongly. They see it as the bedrock of our security, and they have done for the whole time that we've been polling, which is the last 12 years. But we have post-election polls that go even further back than that. So it's been an historically high support. What we also know about that strong support is that it takes a dip on occasion, and that dip seems to correlate with leaders who Australians are not particularly fond of. And it reached an historic low in 2007 towards the end of the presidency of George W. Bush, where it dipped to close to 60% of Australians who saw it as either very important or somewhat important to our security. So there is a correlation, and attitudes towards America as a whole also cool in relation to unpopular presidents. And we've seen a dip this year for the first time, in the largest dip in sentiment towards the US and also in support for the US alliance, in anticipation of, we assume, the possibility of a Trump presidency. So some real uncertainties amongst Australians about how they would feel about a Trump presidency.
I suppose what the takeout from that is that there are political traps for leaders here if they simply assume, because it's a bipartisan approach to the American alliance, that the bulk of the population is on side. It is but, you're saying.
It is but. You know, it might be a little bit risky in these circumstances. We did two questions this year which were different, again, in anticipation of a possible Trump presidency, and we found that around half of Australians thought that we should distance ourselves from the United States in the event of a president like President Trump. And we also found that 60% of Australians said they would be less likely to enter into any sort of military activity in accordance with the alliance under a President Trump. So those are two quite clear indications that Australians are going to be quite wary of a President Trump and what that might mean in terms of how we might be required to act under a US alliance.
Are you saying it's reasonable to say then, based on these figures, that if we were asked, as he might, to step up and do more in South China Sea patrols or whatever, that you'd have to be very careful of these figures?
I think so. And as I said the other night, I think the important thing is going to be to wait and see. I know that sounds very simplistic, but a lot of the more extreme policies that Trump has espoused in terms of, huge trade tariffs with China and those sort of things, may not, in fact, eventuate or might be toned down. So until we know exactly how he intends to approach America's engagement with the world and for us, particularly in our region, then I suspect we should be not making any, additional commitments or bold moves or even withdrawals.
And just finally, the polling issues, given that you are very interested in polls, and it was such a disaster for polls. Yeah. What do you make of that?
Three issues. One is this: the idea of a shy Tory or a shy Trump voter, and that's that was in play in the 2015 UK elections, which the pollsters got horribly wrong, and also appears to be in play here. But I think there are two other issues. One is election eve polling. There seems to be an impact from publishing the results of polling in the week, in the days leading up to an election, which can make people feel complacent and fail to turn up to vote. And that's a big issue when you have not when you don't have compulsory voting. And that's my third and I think most important point about this election polling in particular is voter turnout. And that's been a big issue in American elections. It gets as high as 60%, say in 2008. It was as low as 34% for the 18 to 29 year group in 2000. And in this election, the preliminary indications are that 56% of Americans turned out to vote compared with 62% in 2008. But what's important is the demographic split there. Older voters traditionally turn out in force. We don't have the data yet on the demographic split of the voter turnout, but we do know that young voters did not favour Trump. They heavily favoured Mrs. Clinton. Around 40% only were Trump voters, but they may not have turned out. So I think that's probably the single largest factor in this election polling prediction disaster is voter turnout, and that is something that is very hard to predict from election to election.
Alex Oliver, in charge of conducting the annual Lowy poll on attitudes to Australian foreign policy. And you go to their website to read its findings. It really does make good reading. Well, as I said, this question of our links with the US has been exercising some significant minds and displaying some very different temperamental approaches to this vital question, as you'll hear summarised, really, in these grabs from the 7:30 report late this week.
We've got to this sort of almost sort of crazy position now where the American alliance, instead of simply being a treaty, where the United States is obliged to consult with us in the event of adverse strategic circumstances, it has now taken on a reverential, sacramental quality. It's like a sacrament.
This is a relationship so deeply embedded in history and sentiment that it survives changes of personnel both in Canberra and Washington.
Well, there are more opinions, of course, about how we've engaged with our great and powerful friend in the past and how we'll do so in the future. But I do think that John Howard and Paul Keating have a way of distilling some different ends of the spectrum of attitude. Let's hear some more analysis from an historian who joined us last year on Saturday Extra to talk about his acclaimed book, Unholy Fury, Whitlam and Nixon at War. James Curran participated as well in a major Lowy Institute briefing on Wednesday evening that I attended with various observations about what might confront us or console us. And I'm delighted to welcome him now. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Geraldine.
I just have to ask you before we get into the basis, this story that seems to have exploded about the ABC is reporting that the government is ready to do a deal to send those refugees from Manus Island and Nauru to the United States, which is an amazing development. It's to be confirmed, of course. It did make, if that is the case, James, you remember earlier this year, Mr. Turnbull announced at a refugee summit at the UN that Australia would take refugees from Central America, processed by the UNHCR in Costa Rica as part of Australia's annual refugee intake. And I mean, really, everybody here sort of said, what? Does this all make sense now?
Well, I mean, it is a remarkable development. I think what's also remarkable is the bipartisan support that it seems to be attracting in the initial stages. I think the Labor opposition have asked for more details, but certainly they've offered conditional support. But also what's, I think, fascinating about it is the realisation amongst the government that the clock is ticking to January the 20th next year. And I think there is some concern that they are doing this in advance of a presidency, the Trump presidency. And Trump, as we know, has had a very hardline stance against immigration. This is a candidate who spent much of his period campaigning for office talking about building a wall with Mexico and taking a tough stance on Muslims entering the United States. And most of these refugees that will be part of this deal are Muslims. So the kind of the haste now that will attend these deliberations, I think, also says something about deep concern within the government again, about the uncertainty and the unpredictability of what a Trump presidency might mean for Australia.
Yes, in a very interesting analysis by you. I mean, there's obviously a lot. The first I heard was 6 a.m. news. So there's a lot to come on that very, I think, significant story.
Well, I think also too, Geraldine, there was a kind of a haste to conclude that Darwin Marine rotation agreement before the election as well. And again, I think now that's been bubbling along basically since that deal was signed in 2011, this disagreement over whether or not the United States or Australia would pay for the upgrading of the training facilities up there in the Northern Territory. And I suspect that part of the haste towards the election was a concern that Donald Trump might not honour the deal, given what he'd said about the Koreans and the Japanese and how they had to pay more.
So this gets to the essence of where we stand. Now, do you feel that there will be a fundamental reordering of the alliance, that we will have to, as it were, stand on our own 2 feet more?
Well, I think the reactions, as you pointed out at the beginning of the program, are interesting. There have basically been three reactions in Australia. There's been the kind of the Paul Keating reaction, which says we have to cut the tag finally with the United States. That's the kind of radical nationalist position. We've got to be a lot more independent. Then there's been the kind of more alliance sentimentalist position, which is about Australia has no better friend. The Americans understand that they have no better ally or stronger friend in the region. That's been the sort of quiet voice of reassurance, with Malcolm Turnbull, I think, the other day, reaching for a kind of a Churchillian gravity that he'd struggled so far to achieve in his time in office. The other reaction, of course, is panic. I mean, you've got a lot of analysts and commentators running around saying we need a plan B, the alliance is in crisis. I mean, the president-elect Trump probably needs to cut some slack. Now, I don't doubt that the comments that he was making during the election are definitely concerning about, basically he was articulating a position that amounted to the trashing of the post-war US alliance system both in Europe and indeed in Asia. But already we're seeing some signs of recalibration, Geraldine. Two of his advisors wrote an article in Foreign Policy the other day where they said that Trump would sit down respectfully with both officials in Seoul and Tokyo and talk about how these alliances could work better. They referred to the fact that he believes in the vitality of these alliances for regional stability. And I suspect too that there will be more moderate Republicans that, even if gingerly, they come back sort of into the Trump fold to try and help shape a Trump foreign policy. So, in other words, no, I don't think the sky will fall in. The intelligence relationship will continue. The military-to-military relationship will continue. But I do think it is going to get harder for Australia in the future to keep riding these two horses simultaneously. What we don't know.
You mean of China, the trade relationship with China and the strategic relationship with the US?
That's right. And I think the thing that should worry Australian policymakers and politicians is how does Trump react in a crisis? I mean, we have already been, to some extent, standing on our own 2 feet in not following the United States through the 12 nautical mile zone in these freedom of navigation operations through the South China Sea. We didn't accept Obama's advice about not joining the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. We did that. We're not hosting B-1 bombers on Australian soil. So there's already, you know, Australia is already making some choices there. But what happens in a crisis? What's Trump's temperament like? What's his judgment like in a crisis? That will be the real test. But Australia will need to say no a little bit more often, I suspect, to America. And America won't like that. America bristles at independently minded allies. So Australia may well need to toughen up. It's all very well to have these reassurances and these, you know, this idea that we got a kiss and a cuddle from Rudy Giuliani and he said, well, don't worry, we do love Australia. You know, that's simply not good enough, and we should approach those soothing words with a great deal of caution. Very easy to say in a campaign.
You know, I have been wondering whether this is all akin to when Britain announced in the 60s that it was leaving us to ourselves in a way and joining the European Economic Community, which people like Robert Menzies were, you know, really rather stunned by.
And apoplectic. That's right. The headlines in the newspapers the day after that were, in the Melbourne Herald, "Waken to our peril." Now, I think you make a very good point. Australian foreign and defence policy has suffered much bigger shocks than this. The British announcement that they would seek membership of the EEC. As you say, the announcement that they would withdraw their troops from east of Suez. Look, even the Nixon Doctrine in 1969, when the Americans were recalibrating their Asian posture, there were all sorts of politicians at the time saying, goodness me, you know, we can't be the sheriff in Asia anymore. You can't be the sheriff when the posse has moved out of town. there have been a lot bigger shocks, and we've been delivered much blunter messages by America before. John F. Kennedy said, America's forgotten Anzus.
Yes. Look, this very quickly, there is rumour of a pardon for Julian Assange. Have you heard any more about that?
I haven't heard anything on the grapevine about that. That would be fascinating, given how much the Trump campaign enjoyed exploiting those WikiLeaks emails that bubbled through the campaign.
Yes, and also, obviously, we don't have time, you know, the Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Rybakov admitting that there were significant high-level conversations, regular high-level conversations with senior Trump people. So, look, there's lots to talk about. James, I think we'll try to have you back before the end of the year. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you, Geraldine.
And James has a paper coming out in December, a very timely paper called Fighting with America, Why Saying No to the US Wouldn't Rupture the Alliance. He's rapidly rewriting the foreword, we were told, on Wednesday night, so look out for that.